man, freak out.
You're listening to the Brenton On Tour podcast.
That's right.
He travels the world running concerts and searches for the best coffee, people, and amazing stories so you don't have to.
Pay attention, you're going to learn something for a change.
This is a show about all of those things and much, much more.
You're blowing my mind right now. I hope someone's recording this.
So settle in. Pour a cup of amazing coffee.
He's a coffee snob, by the way.
Crank that ghetto blaster and enjoy the 150,000 ranked podcast in the land.
Ah, fake laugh. Hiding real pain.
I think that's an exaggeration.
It's the Brenton On Tour podcast.
Any questions?
Here's BD.
Hello, friends. What's going on? Welcome to the Brenton On Tour podcast for another week. Launching a brand new series called Sober On Tour. What does that mean? All the definitions that go with it. Is it even possible to be sober on tour doing what I do for a living, or what anyone does for a living who spends, you know, copious amounts of time from a tour bus to an arena to catering to a hotel to a tour bus to press, to all these things that have to go on, keep you functioning out there. How are we doing it? How are we, you know, maintaining our health? All the rest of it goes into this discussion about being sober on tour and whether it's even possible. So, Coffee, hello, live from Moncton, New Brunswick. I haven't been here for a long, 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 long time. They've built a new arena here. It's just completely changed. The whole place has changed since the last time I was here. So love the Maritimes. Got a substantial amount of my start here. Tour managing bands, Mudmen, Jay Engelschmidt, all these guys. We came out here and did all these shows with Biffy. Hi, Biff. McConnell and Crush. All these bands that we just toured all through the Maritimes. And you can't get your gold record in Canada unless you come to the Maritimes. You got to come out here and do the time. In Newfoundland, you got to do Halifax and Moncton and St. John and all that stuff. So love this part of the world. It was my favorite part of Canada until I moved west. And I'm back for the first time in a long time. Let me take a sip. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about and kind of address on this is because we're getting back into touring. We're getting back into this tour world, and we've been shut down for 2 years. It's been kind of a weird time where the whole thing shut down. I think it's the only time in our business that we'll ever get that kind of break ever again. And now it's back, and it's coming back hard. And in that time, people have had a chance to sort of, they've been sitting at home. Perhaps they were kind of faced with some realities of what tour life was like, things that might have been propping them up, you know, things that might have, you know, got them through the day out here aren't necessarily readily available when they get home. And it's unfortunately caused problems. We've lost people in our business because of it. And it's an issue. I mean, it's a serious issue about mental health and all the rest of it. And there's been a really great movement in our business I've seen, especially, like, I've just been back out on a couple little runs here, but as it ramps up and towards the end, just before COVID and all the rest of it hit, that there was a pretty substantial movement to being fit and better and, you know, just feeling better all the way around and maintaining things. You know, the hard partying days of the past, you know, I think people are wise up to it now. And just, you know, it's big business. This is big business, you know, smashing hotel rooms and throwing things out the window and all that stuff. It's just not good business. And in today's obviously day and age, everything's documented and all the rest of it. So I feel like you're getting a real movement towards mental health. And so for my friends, for instance, like Jess and Andrea, that run an incredible program called Fit on Tour, they basically, their mission is to help people stay fit mentally and all the rest of it on tour. And they were a big help to me when I was going through this this journey and entering into a world of not drinking anymore and trying to do my job and doing the rest of it. We'll get into the minutia, but it was an amazing, you know, app that popped up or Instagram that had popped up that basically gave you a chance to check in every single day and tag what you were doing. And it formed a community, like any community that you would be a part of, whether you're a guitar player community, you know, drummer community, camping community, vegan community, whatever it is. That obviously we know that there's a huge sober community that's out there. And also the fit community that's out there that sticks together, that helps each other, that gets through it together. They prop each other up. They do the whole thing. And Andrea and Jess had formed this thing called Fit on Tour that coincided with me being able to, or try to go on tour and not have a couple of drinks after the show and try to do this job completely sober. Okay. And do it, can I do the long days? Can I do the 17, 18 hour days and not want to, a Jameson, at the end of the night or two or three, you go through it. So that was great. So we'll get into that, but there's all these things that have happened in our business that are starting to help people be more fit and more mentally aware on tour. And I think it's amazing. So as we come into this world of touring again, and people are kind of coming out of their homes for the first time and might've tucked away any demons or might've tucked away any struggles or doubled down on their struggles or whatever it was, regardless, we're all getting back to work. And it's more important than ever for our community to support each other. Now, before, when I was touring and if I was drinking and all the rest of it, just part of it, and like you do, you go out and have some drinks, join the tour, you go to this restaurant, you go to that restaurant, it's a day off, you're in Dublin, you're walking the cliffs of Hope, but then there's a pub at the end of it. So it's like, sure, let's go in for a beer, let's go in for this. It's just so routine to have it as part of our world out here. And it's really something to have people come off of that, go home, have to sit home for 2 years, and then come back to it. And do you hit the ground running and go right back into it? Some people have decided to remove that from their world. And I wanted to touch on that through this series. I want to bring some people in, musicians, people that do my job, the builders, whether it be agents, managers, it doesn't matter. Everyone has been affected in some capacity over the last 2 years, have had to face maybe various struggles, whatever they're going to go through. And I kind of wanted to shed a little bit of light on, my journey into it and just be kind of like, well, it is possible to do it. And this is kind of how I'm doing it. Whether that helps somebody, hopefully, great, amazing. I mean, it's an interesting subject because I call this new series. I mean, it's Brenton on Tour. It's part of like the other stuff that I've done, coffee and travel and life, but Sober on Tour. Sober on Tour has this sort of stigma to it. If it was No Drinks on Tour, it sounds like it's something that the artist created or the name of a tour, for instance. It's like these bands are together and it's called the No Drinks on Tour and we've challenged to not drink for 2 months or something on tour. It's cool. That has a fun intonation to it. That has a fun kind of thing. But when you call something Sober on Tour, now you're putting it into the box. You're putting me into a box. You're putting the guests into the box. You instantly go to the box of like, oh, Sober on Tour. He's doing a series about being sober on tour, which means he had a problem. Why did he get sober? Why is your guest getting sober? I mean, it's just true. It's part of the stigma. It's if you say you're sober, you must have had a problem, right? By definition, I pulled this up the other day. The definition of sober. He's a half decent guy when he's sober, but when he's drunk, he's just not accountable for what he does, and he spends a lot of time drunk, abstaining from drinking alcohol or taking intoxicating drugs, refraining from the use of addictive substances. By definition, at least in the Webster's dictionary, is sober is that. Non-drinks is more of an event. Everyone takes, no drink January, whatever they call it, no drink February or dry January or whatever they do, you know, they're people create events about it. But when you make it about your life and that you make that change to truly become sober, you're putting yourself into a situation where you're going to be judged. You're going to put yourself into a situation where the stigma's there. And that to me is where it becomes where people jump, where they can't stick around to be sober because they can't handle why are you sober? What's wrong? Well, I also don't do coke and I don't do heroin. Yeah, it's a thing, and I've touched on it before, but you put yourself in a box. So can you be sober on tour? Why did I become sober on tour? Why did I become sober on life? I mean, it's each individual journey. Everyone's got their own story. Some people just had to clean it up. Some people just have never drank and by definition have been sober their whole life. Okay. Some people needed a change. I'm no doctor. Hey, I study on it a little bit, but I'm no doctor. But why did I personally do it? So, you know, it's one of those things where I want to tell a little bit of a tale about why I went the road that I did, how I got there and sort of how I'm maintaining. So coming out of like 2018, you know, there was a lot of touring, a lot of traveling, a lot of everything. And I did the math on how many drinks I probably had. And this is where you put yourself in a vulnerable position because people are like, you know, oh, you know, you're at their party. No, actually. And if anyone you that knows me, when I told them that I don't drink anymore, everyone almost had the same look like, what? But you don't really drink, do you? I don't swing off the chandeliers, but I've had my share, that for sure. But I did the math on the whole process and was kind of saying to myself, like, all right, I had a lot of drinks in 2018. It's you taking the band out, you're taking people out, it's part of the thing. It's like, okay, we got 4 days off. It's like, there's a band dinner. There's this, there's that. You got to go out and take them out. In my position where I'm overseeing a tour, you know, I'm overseeing, and working with all the different departments and teams just to make sure everyone's good. Like, you know, do you need anything from me? Do you need anything from us? Do you need anything from us to help this go smooth? And you form relationships through that process that people do lean on you or they need things. And then you just become close. You do three tours a year, you're going to meet 300 people a year. It's just the way it goes. So you go out and what's the connection everyone has? Let's go to the pub. Let's have a beer. Let's do the whole thing. And that's sort of the way in and was the way in for so many of us for so long. And so I just kind of looked back on that time and looked back at my quote unquote drinking career and was like, huh, I think I probably had 1,000 drinks in 2018. And people are like, holy shit, 1,000 drinks. What's that? What do you mean? Like, well, that's only like two a day plus a little bit more. Think about it. How many of you, I'm not accusing you, I'm not judging you, but how many people watching and listening have a couple of beer after work or a couple glass of wine after work? And if it's not every single day, it's two on Monday, it's one on Wednesday, it's four on Saturday. But if it averages out to two a day, I mean, you're already at over 700. And then you add weekends, you add days off, you add time off, you add all the rest of it. So I'm like 1,000 drinks. I'm like, geez. Whew. That's a lot. So is that going to continue? Can I do 1,000 next year? Because that's only, you know, I don't have 12 drinks. Again, coming back to the statement of me, like people looking at me going, what? You don't drink very much. Well, I've had my moments, sure. But overall, you know, I'm pretty even keeled about it. But I was kind of doing the math and I'm like, well, I plan on being in this business for a long time. I've been in the business for a long time. But in this role, you know, off and on since 2012, it's just got substantially busier, busier, busier. And now it's taking me away for 30, you know, the last since 2016 and 18, I've been away for anywhere between 20 to 30 weeks a year. So you're just out. And if the way in is let's go meet at the pub and let's have some drinks and all the rest of it, if that's the way in to every single tour, which generally is, you know, you can get caught in that cycle. And I was finding myself getting caught in that cycle. And then it's a couple of drinks after the show. And then it's a couple of drinks, you know, on your days off. And then it goes and it goes and it goes. And I was just like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And I need to see if I can do this job without it, because it is 16 hour days to 20 hour days. This tour I'm on now, it's basically 24 hour on, 24 hour off. So you're consistently, you know, you're in work mode, off work mode, in work mode, recovery mode, in work mode, hit the gym, in work mode, you know, whatever. And if I'm adding the pub and I'm adding all the rest of it to the, it just, it doesn't fly. I've got a substantial amount of responsibility with this job. I need to be at the top of my game. And all the top guys that do what I do, for the most part, from my discussions with them, is that they don't drink anymore. And that blew me away when I discovered that out. And I was like, it got me asking the question, how can you go through a 16 hour super stressful day and not want to drive a couple of Jameson into you at the end of the day? Because that's what the way the whole thing has been going, and the way we've been programmed, but generally speaking, people have used it for various things, coping, or they're stressed or whatever. For me, it was like it would take the pressure off of a day. So, man, I was like, wow. So then I said to myself, okay, I got to see if I can do this job without a drink. Can I pull this off? Can I put myself into the most stressful situation and then, you know, just work through it? So that was the first challenge to myself, which started with basically 30 days, like everyone does with the sober January and all the rest of it, but then turned into more. And that first part of the discovery, and I've touched this before, if you've listened to this show, if you've watched this show, you know that I came across this amazing book called The Sober Diaries. I found it in Heathrow and I started leafing through it. And it was made by this wonderful woman named, written by this wonderful woman named Claire Pooley, which we'll get into. And I just discovered that she basically started documenting her life as a, you know, as a mom trying to balance everything. And then, you know, just driving a bunch of wine into her all week and cleaning it up. And she started documenting her journey day by day and turned it into a very successful blog that millions of people came to. And then she wrote a book about it, and it's so easy to read. And I was able to kind of like read it and get through it. And I reached out to her and had said, listen, this thing is amazing. It's an incredible book and it's really helpful. She reaches back out to me and she says, thanks so much. And it was just this really cool first connection with somebody in that space. And I said, you know, I got through it and I almost caved in. I think it was Cork, Ireland. I was in Cork, Ireland, as you are, in Whiskey Alley. And it's just every single kind of whiskey from around the world. And it was kind of a bit of a stressful time. I missed home. It was the whole thing. And I almost caved. I was like, geez, I really want to go down this road. And I'd read ahead on her book, which I never did. At that point, I'd only read up to, say, a certain amount of, you know, chapters or something, to the days that she was on. I tried to stick to the days that I was on, and man, it was I got to like day 240, which is where I was basically in my journey, and she had caved, and I was like, oh, okay. And I took a step back and was like, read her book up to that point and read what happened to her after she caved and realized that, you know, she felt like she'd made a big mistake and didn't, you know, and wish she hadn't. So that was the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to follow this path here and keep going. And it got me through. And I reached out to her and said, hey, this really helped at day 240. It actually, in the end, I would say it pushed me to that 1 year because I just didn't want to do it. And she reached back out to me and was very, very, very gracious with her words. And I invited her down to meet me and say hello. And she came. I couldn't believe it. And this is Claire and I at the O2 in London, which is one of my favorite buildings in the whole world. Different hair. Yeah, going a little bit to losing some there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Anyways, she came and met me at the O2, and I just thought it was this wonderful time that she gave me. And she put me, you know, she put me in this space where I was now connected to this book, not just as a reader, but I was connected as a friend now of the author. And it's a best-selling book. And it was such a beautiful moment for me on this journey that really pushed me over that year. And then that was like the moment for me where I was like, okay, I think I got this. And once I crossed over a year, I started realizing that all those things and all those urges and all the rest of it to drink were going away. I was balancing them with the gym. I was balancing them with this show, balancing them trying to find all the best coffee in the world. Stand by. This one's really good, by the way. And so I found myself balancing all these other things, and I didn't have the urge anymore. So then as that happens, you start, as I said, I add this to my life from Jess and Andrea, which is Fit on Tour, which is basically a hub for us to go and show what we're doing. You know, you show your gym pics, but how are you staying fit on tour? What are you doing to stay fit on tour? It's an amazing, amazing program. And it kind of coincided out of finding Claire's book, and it just powered me through. And so as I'm going through those discoveries, it was one of those things where I started discovering more people on the journey that were sober, that had decided not to drink on tour. And that was an eye-opening one for me. That was one of those things where, not that I didn't notice it before, but I started discovering way more people that were. And Claire touches on it in the book, where she thinks everyone's partying, and then she realizes it's probably just her partying. And I was like, yeah, I poured a lot of drinks. And by party, I mean, you know, just, hey, do you need another drink? Hey, do you want a drink? Hey, I just poured one. Do you want one? You know what I'm saying? And Claire had said, hey, you know, I discovered quickly that everyone was trying to either catch up to me, or, you know, I was just kind of like, they were coming to watch what I was going to do next. You know, or in that regard. And I just thought it was interesting on that side. So anyways, this book was very, very helpful. I highly recommend it if you're starting your journey to do it. Claire's wonderful, and she's a huge support for everyone in that community. She was wonderful. So it was just a big discovery moment. So there was a few factors. And once I got over that year and started discovering everybody else that was in the business, or that I'd met on tour that was starting to do it, it really opened my eyes that there's just a lot more people doing this than I thought. And coming into this new world of touring now, now we're faced with, you know, we've got 2 years away, and it's more prominent than ever that people's mental health has been, you know, taken into account, that they've done a check on themselves, you know, on, and they've kind of looked in the mirror and said, I think I need to change it up or whatever. And it's just, I think that these conversations need to start happening amongst us on tour, but also support groups of people that while we're out here that, you know, can lean on each other and all the rest of it. So that's something that I'm kind of going through a discovery phase now, to seeing what else is out there. Some big tours have support groups out with them. Some smaller ones, it's more difficult. You've got to kind of find your way of people doing things. And again, there's a lot of stigma around the the sober thing. No one wants the sober person there or whatever. There's still a lot to it, which is why a lot of people bail off of it, because they just can't handle the judgment. And think about that for a minute. People judge you for being sober. They don't really judge you for drinking, unless you're completely out of control, in which case they're like, that guy needs to stop drinking or that girl needs to stop drinking. But as the casual drinker, and you say you don't drink, there's just always like, huh. You know, it's just a very, very interesting dynamic. But through the process, you know, there's a really good article that was sent to me that I'll share with you guys here. And it sort of talks about, you know, the hard party bands are like the outliers now. You know, how rock and roll broke up with booze and drugs. There's Nita, who plays with Alice Cooper. And it's true. There's Randy from Lamb of God. I did a whole tour with them last summer. Great guy. The band is basically sober. Those guys are great guys, you know. And there's just a lot of people that have decided to clean it up. And I don't think a lot of people understand how many musicians have done it. You know, Mike Kerr, Royal Blood. I mean, that band's killer. You know, and looking up to the hard partying madness that was the 80s and all the rest of it. People are like, well, we got to join a band and we got to smash hotels and we got to do this and that. Well, it's not just the band that goes through that, everybody. You know, there's 100 people on tour and there's 100 different stories on tour. Randy's got a great quote here. And this is from The Guardian, by the way. He's got a great quote here about there's this cultural mythos of the artist as an alcoholic and a drug addict. Says Blythe, but I was nervous at first when sober that I wouldn't be able to write, but in fact, it actually unlocked a sort of creative switch in my brain. You know, Mike from Royal Blood, I had an entrenched belief that being hungover intoxicated was great for creativity, but once sober, you know, he wrote Typhoons and then basically they got a number one album out of it. So, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic and all these bands, like, look at these people that are sober. You got Elton John, who's like 30 years. You got Eminem, Lana Del Rey, you know, there's Eminem's, you know, Insta where he talks about it. Anthony Kiedis from the Chili Peppers, you know, Chris from Coldplay, all these guys have chosen to kind of take this approach. And so it's not as uncommon as you think, but people are, I think the biggest thing about being sober and being out here is trying to clean the stigma up and trying to remove the stigma that it's okay to not drink. And, you know, are you bringing the party down because you're not the drinker? I don't know. I don't buy into it anymore. I've been around some amazing sober people, and half the people that I'm going to have on this show, all the people on this I'm going to have on the show are sober, obviously. But the guests are going to tell their tale about what it's like a musician and sober crew person versus the drunk, or versus the partier, or versus someone who has alcohol as a regular means to their life, and it's going to, I think, open a lot of eyes to people that it is possible to do this. And you know, one of the things I touched on before was this thing about calling it sober or no drinks. Oh, we just don't have any drinks on tour. Oh, but you still drink. Oh yeah, we just don't drink on tour. And the definition is unbelievable between the two. You call someone sober, and it's like, ooh. All right, we better be careful around that guy. You call the drinking, the tour a non-drinking tour. And it's like, oh, okay, we're just not drinking. It's so funny. So that's the first thing that I'm hoping that this series does. And I think I'm going to probably run about 10 episodes. We'll go as long as it'll go. But I want to have some people on that want to talk to Journey. And hopefully they'll help people that are struggling. Or, you know, that do our job for a living and are trying to decide whether they can do this without alcohol. It is possible. It is possible to do it without all of it if you got a support group. And so hopefully between, you know, some of these things that we're talking about, Fit on Tour, like I'm going to put the links and all that stuff in below everywhere. And hopefully everyone will start joining it. Even if you're still drinking and you're going to put, you know, being Fit on Tour, it's great. They've done an amazing job. And I just think everyone should just join it. It's an awesome, fun time. And it's amazing to see how many bands and musicians that are out doing it and trying to maintain it. So I'm going to have some guests on that are going to maybe surprise you that they're sober. You're going to be like, what? That person? You know? Yeah. I'm going to have a few of them on. I got some crew guys coming on. Some people that do my job. Some people that work for the artist. Some people that have worked for artists for a long time that have decided to take that approach. So I'm stoked to have them on. I'm going to kick it off next week with my first guest, which we all know. Let me just find it here for you. I had it all done here. Stand by. Where did it go? There we go. So you guys know that I've had Todd Kearns on a bunch before. He's a good friend of mine. Todd plays with Slash and Tuke, and he's, you know, for Canadians, he's Age of Electric. Everyone knows him. So he's going to come on. He's going to be my first guest next week. And we're going to talk about his journey from Lanigan, Saskatchewan into, touring the world with one of the most renowned drinkers of all time with Slash. And, you know, that's going to be an interesting conversation, because I think people are like, well, Slash was, you know, the king partier. He was the guy. Well, he's not anymore. He's sober, and all of his band is basically practically sober. And I think it's going to surprise a lot of people with this conversation that we're going to have. And forgive me here, because I actually had the graphic all queued up and it's now missing. So anyways, as it goes, you know what I mean? Just can't plan. I can't totally plan everything. So totally properly. But anyways, I'm going to have Todd on Kearns from Slash. That's next week when we kick this thing off with the guests. The week after that, I got a couple guys that do what I do. So we're going to talk about that. And then the bands are starting to roll in. I've had a couple of artists that are interested in coming on. And remember, with this thing, it's tough for people to speak about. Some people will be like, nope, it's my personal journey. I just can't get into it. And that's great. That's theirs. And I would never want to have somebody on that wasn't comfortable talking about it. But the people that have agreed to come on are here to talk about it. And I'm very excited about that, because I think it's crucial. I think it's crucial that people understand that you can do this job sober. You can do this job, any job in this business. And I also want to say that this could be sober in the office. This could be called sober, you know, in sports. This could be called sober in business. This could be called sober in podcasting, whatever it's going to be. Right now it's sober on tour, because I'm on tour and this is what I do for a living. And I've chosen to not drink, and I've chosen to do this completely with a clear head, and I love it. And, 6 a.m. wake ups, it's really easy to do now ish. But it applies to the business. It applies to, everything we talk about on this show, you can apply to your life. So you can, you know, if Todd might be talking about touring with Slash and growing up in Lanigan, Saskatchewan, and going through the battle, you know, the 150 highball nights, to trying to, you know, to move to Vegas, to move to LA, to play with one of the biggest partiers in the world and do it sober, you can apply that to your office. You can apply it to Wall Street. You could apply it to a sports, you know, being on a hockey team. You can, whatever you can do, you can apply it to all of these things, because hopefully the tools that we're laying out here that we're all going through and how we're getting through it will apply to you, and you can incorporate them in your life. And I believe the Fit on Tour friends are going to have various things, you know, about it. They're going to have options for you to be fit in the office and fit on the road and fit whatever it is. For me, it's search for coffee, regular gym routine, sleep. Nap is the new drink now. A nice good nap. That's the double for me. Getting up, you know, podcasting, this is great. Trying to be creative, trying to tell stories and hopefully have it inspire people to do things, you know, whatever. That's all been really helpful for me. Finding a community out there. I found Janet, who gave me that article from The Guardian. I discovered she's got a great thing called Tribe Sober, an incredible group. You know, that's been amazing. You can find your tribe. You can find your people. And I'm hoping that what we're doing here and what I'm going to try to do over the next 10 episodes, you can take some of that and go for it. I feel amazing. I'm over the stigma part of it. Club Soda and Lime is my best friend. I've touched on it before, but my friends at Partake, this thing is really rad. This is a great non-alcoholic beer from Calgary. So I'm showing it to my friends on screen that are watching, but this thing has been amazing. And I was never a beer guy. I was a whiskey guy, but I discovered this, you know, 10 calories, gluten-free, vegan, all the rest of it. And it was it's just a really well tasting, as close to a beer as I've tasted. And they sponsored the podcast and they were amazing to me, and they still, send me stuff and it's awesome. So, these guys have been awesome and they've been a big help too. So these are just some of the tools that, you know, regular gym, finding your community, staying active, immersing yourself in yourself, which is, you know, basically investing in yourself. That's kind of how I've had to do it. And trying to, you know, lean on the people that are helping you. My family, everyone's been amazing. That's really just really been supportive, and I can't, you know, thank them enough. And one of the things that was really, you know, my son had said to me one time, just a little while ago, I was pouring a glass of wine for, I don't know, we were at a neighbor's or something. We were at our friends, we went and visited some friends, and I poured a glass of wine, and the look on his face was like, and he goes, "But I thought you were a non-alcoholic." Still the best line. And I said, "Well, I don't drink anymore." That's not necessarily the term, but you go with it. Let's run with it. And it was just an interesting thing about how concerned he was about me even being around it, from observing the idea that I, you know, don't drink anymore. And my wife does, and everyone, tons of friends do. This is me. This is not them. I can be around it. It's fine. It's just the path that I chose to take for my career. And, you know, as I said before, I think we were born with 5,000 drink tickets, and I'm pretty sure I've used them all up. I think I used 1,000 of them in 2018. So it was time to shut it down. So the Sober on Tour series is here. Next 10 weeks, please stick around. Join me. I welcome your thoughts. I'd love to get your input. Please send me a message. I do get a lot of messages after these kind of shows where people are, you know, a little bit reluctant to talk about it publicly, and I totally respect that. My inbox is open. Send me some stuff. I'll send you some of the tools that I've used to get me through it. Since I've started talking about it a little bit more, I'm definitely getting a lot more of those. Pick up Claire's book. It's amazing. The Sober Diaries. It's fantastic. She's wonderful. Again, I just have to show her because she's great. She made the time to join me at one of my favorite arenas. Find Fit on Tour on Instagram and all the places that you can find it. It's a great program. The future is endless for what they're doing. Lots of guests coming up, including Todd Kearns next week from Slash's band, from Tuke, Age of Electric. Great guy that made time and we're going to have a great chat. And again, please reach out, send me notes. I welcome your thoughts. And that's where I'm going to leave it. Sober on Tour begins. Can you be sober on tour? Is it even possible? Well, I'm proof that it can be. It's a work. It's a consistent thing. You got to keep working at it, but you surround yourself with the people that'll help you. You surround yourself with something that you love. Family, coffee, being creative, all these things I love. But it starts with loving yourself. And I had to get back into me. I had to get back into taking care of me so I can do my job the best that I can. I think Bradley Cooper said that he had to quit because he felt like it was holding him back from his full potential. I would agree. I would agree that something had to go in there for me to keep pressing ahead. And alcohol was it. So here I am, sober on tour. Thanks, friends. Thank you so much for joining me this week. The Dean Blundell Show is coming up next on the network. And I welcome your thoughts. Thanks to my friends at Partake. As always, great product. Love it. Go pick it up. You can just drink it even if you still drink and you don't want to drive home from a party. Drink this. This is really, really good. They got a blonde. They got a pale. They got the whole thing. Do it. It's really, really good. Join me next week. Todd Kearns from Slash's band. Sober on Tour continues. In the weeks that follow, tons of friends coming on that are also sober. It is the Brenton on Tour podcast for another week. Please join me at brentonontour.com, where you'll find all the episodes, past, present, and future. This is live on YouTube and Twitter and all the places, but please subscribe if you could. That'd be amazing. We'll see you next week. Really appreciate you guys being here, and thanks for joining me today. All right, friends, be well. Bye.
Hey, listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa. And this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirt bags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.
It is your favorite girl. That's right. It's the Allie Mars, the one and the only. Everyone else just ain't me. I am the host of Welcome to Mars, a lifestyle podcast where nothing is off the table. I have come a long way from sex and dating and have transformed the new vibe to all things lifestyle. We still talk sex, but I'm more interested in the journey, where people have come from, how they made it, and where they're going. Subscribe or follow to a brand new look and a brand new era. Welcome to Mars.
Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, Google, or at theallymars.com.
Because even with the new look, I'm still that same bitch you love to hate.